You're listening to McBee Care Threads, a podcast where leaders across the healthcare industry can learn from each other. We'll discuss stories and explore strategies to help providers deliver value-based care and hear your peers share their best practices for success. Let's get into the show.
Hello and welcome to this McBee Care Threads podcast. My name is Heather Gerard. I am a clinical consulting manager at McBee, specializing in inpatient rehabilitation services through the education, training, and consultation team with Uniform Data System for Medical Rehabilitation, known to the industry as UDSMR. Today, we'll be hearing from our guests at Peterson Regional Medical Facility, Elizabeth Johnson, the Director of Rehab Services, James Aliman, Lead Occupational Therapist, and Cheyenne Holmes, Assistant Director of Rehab. In today's episode, we'll explore their CMI journey, highlighting the strategies and processes they implemented to successfully boost their CMI, along with how UDSMR and McBee played a role in this effort. So Elizabeth, James, and Cheyenne, thanks for spending time with us today. And let's start by having you introduce yourselves and telling us about Peterson Regional Medical Facility and your rehab program in particular. Elizabeth?
Hi, my name's Elizabeth Johnson. I'm the Director of Rehabilitation Services here at Peterson Health. I've been here about 6 years, and in total, I've been in the rehab industry about 35 years. And we are a 124-bed facility with 26 inpatient rehab beds. And its population in Kerrville is about 25,000, with the hospital serving six surrounding counties. We're known for being a retirement destination, and we know that in comparison to the nation, our average age of our IRF patients is about 7.5 years older than the nation. So I think that plays a really important part in our journey. James?
My name is James Aliman. I am an occupational therapist here at Peterson. I've been with Peterson for about 5 years, with about 10 years of experience in both the acute rehab unit as well as just general inpatient as well as outpatient services. I've had a couple certifications for NDT, mostly neuro-based, spinal cord injury, vestibular rehab, as well as Parkinson's disease. I'm very happy to be here.
Hi, I'm Cheyenne, the Assistant Director of our acute rehab here at Peterson. My background is mostly in acute rehab, to include the PPS coordinator and admission liaison coordinator positions. I am a nurse with my CRRN and have been with Peterson coming on 22 years.
Great. And I'm so glad to hear about, you know, Elizabeth's leadership ability to really empower this team and bring James and Cheyenne into these project leadership roles, putting the right people in the right roles. And so we'll start with just a quick overview of CMI for our listeners. So CMI is the case mix index. This is a metric of how severe are the patients that are admitted to an inpatient rehab facility from a medical and a functional standpoint. It's a focus for many IRFs because it relates to payment for patients with Medicare fee-for-service, as well as quality and outcomes tracking. And just as an example, for calendar year 2023, the average unadjusted CMI for our subscribers, which make up about 80% of the IRFs throughout the nation, was 1.4208. So I'll ask you all to tell us a little bit about how you determined that you had an issue with your CMI. I know that Peterson contacted us at UDS regarding a CMI consult, but there must have been some conversation and some steps that you all went through prior to reaching out to us. So tell our listeners about how your process identified the overall need for improvement and where you started.
Being a small nonprofit community hospital, we really don't have any lifelines like quality departments or consulting experts. However, the hospital's expectation is that we really reach high for outcomes. Our mission is world-class care, and so we aspire to be the top 10% in everything we do. So the hospital's been consistently winning a lot of awards as top rural community hospital, modern healthcare, best places to work 4 years in a row, Quality Texas Award, and we're currently on the magnet journey. So for rehab, they really challenged us to try to find metrics that we could work on, we could sink our teeth into. And so from the rehab perspective, looking at the case mix index, we knew we had some work to do. We were not anywhere near the nation's number for that, significantly lower than the nation in spite of our number one admitting diagnosis being stroke. We were also concerned about our GG scores and noticed that we were much higher in admission scores, causing our overall GG gain to be much smaller than the nation. And we suspected that we had some issues with scoring consistencies. We then launched a simultaneous effort to improve the CMI, which Cheyenne's going to talk about, and the GG scoring, which is what James is going to talk about. But it's really been a challenge from our own leadership here at, and our culture here at Peterson to try and be the best in whatever metric we choose. Cheyenne, would you like to start?
Sure. So in kind of our first steps in really trying to focus and understand the CMI and what areas we could improve, we had a really good opportunity, kind of like Elizabeth said, simultaneously, in that we were realigning some staff, rearranging some roles, really kind of brought in some new eyes and eager beavers that were really kind of ready to learn and really wanting to elevate our program. So when we were going through all of that process and re-educating, we realized that there were some gaps and some missed opportunities in some of the comorbidity condition codings. So with this opportunity, we thought, okay, let's just go back to the basics. Let's start from scratch. You know, we have a new PPS coordinator who is going to really kind of embracing the role and really eager to learn. So after we understood more about the details of the CMI and what it includes, we realized that there was some importance in specifying ICD-10 codes and really kind of understanding those tiers. Within UDS, there are some tools and information that we utilized and kind of built a Bible, per se, of a list of these tiered codes that we most frequently use and really reference them in every patient that we are looking to admit to our acute rehab unit. When specifying these ICD-10 codes, we really felt like it was some low-hanging fruit. We realized that taking just an unspecified type 2 diabetic code to a type 2 diabetic with hyperglycemia code really kind of gives us a little bit of opportunity and creating an idea of, instead of just using a generic obesity code, using morbid obesity due to excessive calories, just more specifying heart failures, kidney failures, really kind of looking at some of those that we could be a little bit more specific on. This led to a lot of collaboration with the medical director, between the PPS coordinator, the medical coders, all in order to improve the communication and education about specific codes and the need for inquiries to the physicians, to really ensuring that we're questioning and when there are unspecified codes and not just rolling through them and really kind of trying to dig deep into them. Some of the monetary gains that we gained from some of these things, I'll give you a couple of examples. We have a stroke patient with diabetes. If we unspecify the diabetes, that is a tier A in the system. If we specify the diabetes with hyperglycemia, it becomes a tier D, increasing the payment close to $1,000. Strokes with morbid obesity, the obesity generic code is a tier A. Morbid obesity due to excessive calories is a tier D, increasing the reimbursement by about $1,300. We largely focused on strokes during this project, but one of our other large patient populations is hip fractures, just our retirement community, debility, comorbidities that really decrease patients' functional status in the community. One of the opportunities we found with those patients was we found that a lot of them had dysphagia. And so if we get the speech therapist involved in kind of really looking at that, a hip fracture without dysphagia is a tier A. If we say and are able to appropriately diagnose a hip fracture patient with dysphagia, it changes our reimbursement to almost $3,000. So we found just a lot of opportunities like this, just in specifying the code, increasing reimbursement, it increases the complexity of the patient. It also increases the potentially the patient's length of stay. So we really have been trying to focus on that. In addition to this, we brought in the admission coordinators, realizing there was an opportunity to kind of start these things from the beginning, not just post-acute IRF admission. So we brought them in on this. They're really trying to help us dig down into these codes to make sure that the providers in acute care and our medical director are all on board with some of these diagnoses, and when they feel it's appropriate, you know, we collaboratively as a team specify the codes. The PPS coordinator has also started attending team conference, which has helped look for opportunities for additional codes. You know, there's a lot of conversation that occurs in those meetings that don't always necessarily make it to the progress note as a diagnosis for the coders to pick up or the H&P. So the PPS coordinator's really been helpful and a really good tool for us to use during those meetings to kind of help pull out some of those things. One of the big things that we have learned is that with education and communication, that's just kind of been the key factor between all of these different layers, admissions coordinators, medical director, the coders, the PPS coordinator, and just all of the folks in general involved. Therapies really kind of also playing a big key in that, learning the things that we're looking for, learning how to help improve, and we're working more collaboratively instead of kind of in silos like we had done a little bit more before.
I love that. I love how you're able to involve the entire team. So I think a lot of facilities, if they, you know, dial into our comorbid conditions are part of the problem, might really focus on the physicians and the coders. But I love that you thought a little bit outside the box and brought in, you know, the admission liaisons and the PPS coordinators and the therapists even, right, to help point out some of those conditions or help to be more specific about documenting those conditions like dysphagia. Really helps to increase the level of severity for all patients, especially those who maybe do have less complex impairments, like you mentioned, you know, your hip fracture population, for example. Now, you know, that's a less complex impairment overall, but you're figuring out how to really involve that entire team of people in accurately representing the severity of the patient that you're working with. So that's great.
Yeah, we had, by making these couple of little tweaks and really trying to focus on some of these specific codes that we do generally see a lot, you know, some comorbidities are a little more common than others, but we over time have really kind of almost flip-flopped the tier A's or the non-tiering codes to being at least a tier D code. And we have really made the flop on that. In 2022, 65% of our patients were in a tier A. And now in 2024, well, as of through 2024, we've dropped that to 37%, with 60% of our patients falling into a tier D level. So we're pretty proud of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great job. So from there, it sounds like you turned your focus, you know, the comorbid conditions, as you said, were kind of the low-hanging fruit. That was the, you know, for lack of a better word, the easiest thing to change, which I'm sure it was not easy and involved some work and some great teamwork. But from there, you turned your attention to quality indicator assessment and coding of those GG codes. The functional activities, self-care, and mobility codes. So, James, why don't you tell us a little bit more about that piece of the project?
Sure. Yes. Kind of like we alluded to earlier, Elizabeth had asked me about a year and a half or so ago to see if I was interested in kind of not necessarily spearheading, but trying to help out with this aspect of things. And I'll be honest, from like the clinician side of things, you see things kind of like how Cheyenne was talking about, in kind of a silo. You don't necessarily see everything as a team effort or anything like that. You go in for an eval, you put in your admit scores, and then, you know, you just treat the patient and then you go from there. But by doing this, you actually realize that every single thing that you do is going to affect everything else, okay? So that kind of getting my mindset and thinking that way really, really helped me out with things. And whenever we're trying to, first things first, you always have to figure out what exactly is the problem. Because we knew that, you know, something was going on with our GG scores compared to the nation. And so we tried to figure out what the problem was. And originally we thought, hey, you know what? It's got to be our discharge scores. Our discharge scores just aren't good enough. What's going on here? And so we ended up, fortunately, UDS, we did a consult with y'all, and you were able to look through everything and see kind of what our low-hanging fruit was on the QI side of things or on the GG side of things. And it wasn't the DC scores. It was actually our admin scores. Our DC scores compared to the nation are right on par with everything, if not even a little bit above it, which is great, obviously. What we were struggling with was on our admin scores. So figuring out, you know, what our problem was first was the first thing to do. And then once we did that is the education aspect of it. So first I have to educate myself and kind of be vulnerable and understanding the things that I didn't understand. Because if I didn't understand it, there's a good chance that members of my team probably aren't going to understand it either. So by educating myself, attending some of the in-services, as well as having an on-site education with actually you coming by here to the small town of Kerrville, Texas. So thank you for coming. We appreciate that very much.
Really, it was fun.
It was a Saturday whenever you came down. So we were able to get literally the entire team was here. So our scheduler was very happy to move a lot of things around for that. So fortunately we were able to get all that done. But the benefits of that was actually being able to discuss kind of the nuances of what we were doing in the evaluation, on the typical evaluation, both on the OT side of things and the PT side of things, and see, you know, what is the correct, what is the norm way to do an evaluation. And we found out, quite honestly, a lot of times we were already setting somebody up in a way that they were not used to. So we're kind of setting them up in a way that was more of a therapeutic intervention as opposed to an evaluation. And so once we stood back and we said, hey, as long as this patient is safe, and we got this from you, as long as this patient is safe, let's evaluate to see what their true baseline potential is. And once we were able to kind of implement a lot of those strategies that y'all helped us with, honestly, it really did kind of benefit us on the admit side of things, because our scores were starting to show more and more of that patient's true potential. So thank you. Thank you very much. It's kind of a hard thing, because as a therapist, you know, whether it's an OT, a PT, a speech therapist, we always want to give our patients a lot of times the benefit of the doubt, you know, like, oh, well, you could probably do it if we set you up in this situation, but that's not the purpose of an evaluation. The purpose of an evaluation is to see somebody's true potential as they are. And so once we were able to do that, I think that really kind of helped us out as far as getting our GG scores for the admit side of things on par with the nation.
Yeah, as a PT myself, I identify with that, so I'll own that too. But as a PT, you know, easily therapists, we can jump into helping improve patients' performance because we're excited about their potential, really almost before we're really truly assessing their baseline. So,
and from the therapy side of things, it's kind of tough too, because whenever you talk about, you know, educating other therapists about it, a lot of times it's tough because you want to have that buy-in. And that's honestly one of the toughest things to get is that buy-in factor. But if you explain it to your colleagues as that, in that you aren't affecting their treatment strategies, okay? This is literally just putting in scores so you can send it off, okay? So this has nothing to do with the ability that patient is going to have by the time they get out of here, your treatment strategies as in what you can do during your sessions to get that patient to that highest functional or independent level. So it has nothing to do with that. And if you step away from that and you try not to be, you're proud obviously as a therapist, but you have to be at the same time, you have to be willing to learn and willing to evolve and educate yourself. And the more and more we go through this kind of stuff, and the more and more I'm realizing we have a really, really good team here that is open to that. They're very open to receiving that, you know, education. You know, this is the reason why we're going to, you know, evaluate this way, or this is the reason why we put our scores this way, is to show that patient's true potential. Okay, we don't want to skew any scoring or anything like that, because we want that patient's true functional ability at the time of evaluation. And once we kind of get that across and we open things up and we're open with our team here, that really helps things out quite a bit. Because like I said before, when I first started looking at it, I was thinking in that same mindset what Cheyenne was talking about, in that I was working in a silo. I didn't understand what my scores were doing to the team as a whole. And so now that the team is kind of understanding that, I think it's really helping us evolve.
So from a logistics standpoint, is there different documentation and different codes that are documented by multiple disciplines throughout your medical record? I know this is something that many of our facilities struggle with. You know, what do we do with all these codes? So in your facility, in your process, how does the PPS coordinator decide which code is recorded on the IRFPI for a particular functional item?
So for all of our self-care and mobility, obviously we have occupational therapy and physical therapy evaluations performed within that three-day window. Obviously, the sooner the better, obviously. But what we do also is we also have what we call a nursing activity sheet. And basically what this is we have PCTs or CNAs along with our nursing staff that have been trained on this form that we use inside of each of the evaluating rooms, basically. And we do not have all of the GG scores on there. We have quite a few of them that they might see during their first initial stay. For instance, eating, oral hygiene, a toilet transfer. Typically, if a patient is here for at least a few hours, they're probably going to have to go to the bathroom at least once, probably going to have at least one meal. Same thing with footwear, rolling to the left and to the right. Even if we have a patient that might be spinal precautions, with all of our nursing and PCTs, CNAs, they're all aware of spinal precautions and exactly the correct procedures to do these things. So what we do is basically we have a list of all these items, and then next to that we have assistance required. So instead of putting independent, modest, supervision, dependent, whatever it might be, what we have is basically an assistance level. So we have a little box that says 100% assistance, and then we have a box underneath that that says 51 to 99% assistance. And basically what this does is it takes away that thought, the process of, that person who is a CNA or a PCT, they might not remember exactly what a percentage is for a partial modicis, but they remember, I was helping them, they were able to do half the work and I was only had to do half well with 25%, whatever it might be. So they just basically put a percentage assistance level. We as a therapist go in there and we actually see this on there. They've documented the correct box that was scored as well as the initial, that staff member's initials and the date. So we can actually go talk to that staff member and ask them, okay, I'm just going to confirm with you. So you said they were able to do half of this without any assistance. Is that correct? Oh, yes, they did really good with toileting, whatever it might be. And we were able to kind of show that on our documentation whenever we go in there, because we have a narrative box under each of our scores and we can put on there per John Snow, PCT, CNA, patient required this much assistance, described as such. And we actually can put in there exactly how they performed that task if we were not able to personally see it ourselves. Obviously, we try to see everything ourselves firsthand. That's going to be the easiest way to get our scores. But for instance, if we have somebody who goes to the bathroom three or four times with a PCT and we only saw that transfer one time, remember, we're trying to collect the typical score, not the patient's best or their least ability. We're trying to collect that patient's typical score. So that's the reason why we're able to use this as part of that. And we use it all together. So everybody's talking to each other, nursing staff's talking to therapy and vice versa. And so that way everybody's on the same page with everything.
I love the teamwork at your facility. I think I want to work there next.
Once they get those scores, typically the therapist, the PT and OTs are responsible for the majority of the functional scores and abilities. Nursing does the focus on the bowel and bladder scores. So then there's one intervention within our system where we kind of document all of the scores once they've been collected and validated. And so our PPS coordinator just has to go into those specific interventions instead of looking all through the chart, right, and trying to gather what they understand to be the appropriate scores. That's determined by the therapist and nursing, and then they just look at that one. She just looks at that one intervention.
Makes it a lot easier that way.
And so I know we've been really focused on the admission coding and how that factors into the CMI, since that's kind of our overall topic. But I appreciate that you have been also talking about, I've heard you mention the discharge codes and the discharge assessments. So what have you all learned about the importance of sharing outcomes data with the team? And do they have exposure? How often do they have exposure to that data?
So we actually just had our monthly ARU meeting this morning, about 2 hours ago. So every month, basically, we always have meetings as well as check-ins to kind of show our trends for that month, for the quarter, and so forth. Typically, once a week, I'll do a kind of a chart audit, basically, especially for our admissions as well as our discharges. And I'll send out emails. I just sent out two or three of them yesterday, talking about how great we're doing, especially on our discharge scores. We had, I think, three patients that on both the self-care and the mobility side of things discharged at independent level for every single score. So we were fantastic. So obviously on that one, I send out a good kudos to everybody, let everybody know that they're doing a great job, and you know, whatever you're doing as far as your treatment strategies and everything like that, it's working, so keep it up. So everybody's kind of tries to stay in the loop as much as possible and concerned with that, because like I said, a lot of times, you know, whenever you know kind of what you're doing is going to affect everything else, it's going to help you work harder, and it's going to help you do better as far as understanding what you need to do to address any barriers.
We're also a CARF accredited program. We have a dashboard that we maintain, and I'm sure a lot of facilities out there maintain a similar dashboard, whether you're CARF accredited. And we've included the GG scoring in the dashboard so that everybody can see that. We update that quarterly and then place it on common bulletin boards and celebrate the changes with our team during staff meetings.
It's a great way to achieve that buy-in that James was talking about earlier. So I don't want to close up today's conversation without mentioning that this project, this performance improvement process, has actually earned you all at your rehab facility or rehab unit recognition from Peterson's CFO. So Elizabeth, tell us a little bit more about that.
Our CFO was very excited when she heard about our progress, and we were able to take our CMI change and the number of stroke cases that we were able to add tiers to and put that into a dollar amount. And for our stroke patients, it resulted in an average increase in reimbursement of $1,445 per stroke case. So our team was recognized by our CFO in the monthly board of directors meeting, and in what our CFO, her name is Lisa, and what she calls the Lisa Hearts Club, which is also described and highlighted during our directors meeting. So she was really excited about that. She thought it was great that it was kind of a grassroots effort, all of our team joining in and working on that together, the excitement that the team had about the project. And she loved that whole idea and wanted to use that as an inspirational point for the rest of the directors and departments.
Great. I think it's probably a lot of inspiration and excitement for other listeners out there, other inpatient rehab facilities in the industry. So thank you for sharing your story. So Elizabeth, Cheyenne, James, thank you for taking the time to join me and share your insights with our listeners today. So it was truly inspiring for me, and I'm sure for our listeners, to learn about the passion that you all have behind this successful performance improvement process at your inpatient rehab facility and within Peterson overall. So I am also grateful to hear how UDSMR McBee and me personally, I could support you through this journey. So thanks again, and a big thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in. We look forward to connecting again in the next episode of McBee Care Threads.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
At McBee, we understand the challenges providers face across the healthcare landscape. For more than 45 years, we've been a part of the evolution of the healthcare industry. Our strategic advisory solutions span the home health, hospice, health system, and senior living care continuums, creating improved clinical, financial, and operational outcomes. Our expertise is guaranteed. Our solutions empower. Visit us today at McBeeAssociates.com. Thank you for listening to McBee Care Threads. To ensure you never miss an episode, please subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. If you use Apple Podcasts, we'd love for you to give us a quick rating for the show. Just tap the number of stars that you think the podcast deserves. For more information on the topics discussed today, visit our website at mcbeassociates.com. Until next time.